This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Okay, what up? Hour number two. What's going on? Tiki and Tierney coming to you from the Tiki and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Millions of Americans finance the home of their dreams with their help. They can help you as well. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage, Tiki and Tierney. I know my partner's not yet into Ozark, but if you are and you are not too deep into it, we plowed through episode number three last night. Getting pretty good.
I told you what I was indulging in over the weekend and even into this week. Star Wars.
Yes.
The original trilogy. We just did the Phantom Menace today. So I hear you. The early three. I don't really love.
Oh, those are the best. You're talking about A New Hope, Empire, and Return Jedi.
Yeah, no, those are great.
Those are the best.
I'm talking about the like 1, 2, and 3.
Ugh.
4, 5, and 6 were amazing.
No, 1, 2, and 3.
It's kind of like.
But let me ask you a question here, and I think that's universally agreed upon. But independent of age group, but
I forgot how annoying Jar Jar Binks was.
Oh,
let's put it that way.
It got so corny, childish. They tried too much with the trickery and the stupid imagery. I mean, Yoda jumping off the ceiling. I mean, oh God. But do you think if it was inverted and we were introduced to, in a more conventional fashion, 1, 2, and 3, when we were introduced to it as when we were introduced to A New Hope, Empire, and Jedi as kids, if it was the other way around, do you think we would feel the same way? Almost this disdain for the ones that came after.
I don't think it would have gotten that deep. I don't think we would have had 9 films and all the Clone War spinoffs and everything. I don't think it would have happened because it wouldn't have been as popular.
Interesting.
Right? There was just something magical. Perfect. Perfect about like A New Hope and then like this coming of age story of Luke Skywalker. And you know, Mark Hamill, I didn't know much of what else he did. I know he was...
Theater, right?
Yeah, and exactly. So he had a really good acting career, but like his evolution from A New Hope to Return of the Jedi,
it's just like
physically,
yes.
He looked different. And
yeah,
it's just kind of like, dude, it's only 8 years or 5 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But you looked more mature. He looked like he was evolving into a Jedi. It was kind of awesome. Like when you go back and look at it.
Now, Teak, you need to get out of the house, buddy. You're taking this a little bit too literally, buddy.
I can't help it, man. I'm watching it for the first time with Tracy. Well,
yeah.
I've seen him, obviously, but she's watching him.
Did she like him?
She does.
Nice.
So I'm looking at it with a different like eye because I'm kind of telling her what's happening as it's all going along.
But uh-huh.
You just Luke really grew up, man.
It's funny you say that because when he was working for Uncle Owen and Aunt Farouk and on the farm, you know, not the farm, but in the desert, but similar, you know, like their farm. In A New Hope, when he goes to the Dagobah system and meets Yoda for the first time, he's actually a little bit jacked.
Yes.
When he started to levitate. I know what you mean. And we're getting really nerdy with this.
I know.
I have a question for you before we get into Herbert and Tua. So I want to ask you in an open-ended way, because one of the questions in Inbounds, Out of Bounds was about, you know, Carmelo and Darko, who was clearly a bust. And, you know, I refute, and I always will, the way Santa writes that that Sam Bowie was a bust. Sam Bowie was not a bust. But I want to ask you, as a former ball player, what constitutes a bust in your mind? What is your definition?
So, bust is someone who's taken really high, so top 5 usually, Even outside the top five, it's kind of, you're still kind of reaching, especially in basketball, because you never know. Like, it just, history proves that that's true. To me, a bust is someone who never figures it out. So it's not necessarily injury. It's, you have all the talent in the world, enough to be taken in the top five, and you just suck. Like, you become a bench player, or you just never get it. To me, that's bust. The expectation of someone taken in the top five is that you're going to be a perennial all-star, if not a bona fide superstar. That would be bust. And I don't know enough about Sam Bowie to say whether or not he was. I just know that his career was derailed pretty early. And stayed that way.
Oh, for sure. I'm not asking you to get into the weeds on Sam Bowie. I just meant in totality, because I think you're right. I mean, the way I would frame it is, to me, a bust is somebody whose level of achievement is nowhere near commensurate with their draft status. That's the most simple way that I would define it. But at least, you know, for me, specific to Bowie, you know, in the 80s, when the big men was, you know, the walking giant, the dominating force in the NBA, he was drafted in 1984-85. And you had Jabbar, you had Moses, you had a young Ewing, you had Hakeem, you had Robert Parrish hanging on, you had Gilmore, Artis Gilmore. And I don't know, when a guy comes into the NBA at the age of 22, whatever he was, and averages 10 points and 9 rebounds and 3 block shots as a rookie in an era where big men were legit, and then the next year goes for 12 points and 9 rebounds and 3 block shots, can't say that guy's a bust. I can't say his foot and his lower extremities betrayed him 5 times. He was not a bust, not at all. But I was just curious how you framed it, because we throw that around loosely. Oh, what a bust. I mean, yeah, Jamarcus Russell's a bust. I mean, he was just sub-professional.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, the guys who don't put in the work. Right? So it's funny, because when I think about, I mean, it's become a cliche, BT, like, the best player on your team better be your hardest worker, right? It's that guy who's there first, who leaves last. He's the leader. He's Tom Brady. And if you're not that, then, you know, your likelihood of success is rare. Now, there's some guys that get away with it. Like, I think, I don't know this for a fact, but I think Allen Iverson was kind of like this, right? He got away with it. You remember the whole practice thing?
Yep.
Talk about practice? I'm here to practice. I'm here to play games. But he was still great. You know what I mean? But there's some guys who don't put in the work, and it shows. And that, to me, if you're drafted in the top two or three, mm-hmm. then you're a bust. And that was Jamarcus Russell, to your point. He didn't want to work, right? That famous story about, you know, his coach giving him a playbook, and there was money inside of it. And he's like, where'd you find out on XYZ page? He's like, oh, it was awesome. Yeah, dude, he BS'd his way through it. When in fact they knew he didn't open it, because it was money on the page.
That's amazing.
So it is amazing, but it just tells you, you know, why some people are successful. They have all the potential in the world. Two people, all the potential in the world. One of them successful, one's not.
Yep.
Sometimes it comes down to work ethic, and if you don't put in the work and you end up sucking, that's on you. You're a bust.
I'm with you. All right, let's transition to two young men who I think we all have confidence will put the work in Justin Herbert and Tua Tagovailoa. I don't think there's any chance Tua will be a bust, because if he's not a star, it will be because his body will not allow him to be. Herbert, I do believe, based on where I expect him to get taken, certainly inside the top 10, there could be an element of bust with him. I'm not as high on Herbert as others. I'm just not. And I've remained steadfast in that conviction since day one, since he burst on the radar a couple of years ago. I'm not saying he can't be good. I'm just not all in. I'm sorry. I am all in on Tua. I would move mountains to get up and draft him. I would jump over and give up real desirable draft equity to trade for him, to be able to get in a position to trade to draft him via trade. Herbert, I would not do that. Do you think, because now there's a sentiment that the teams that prefer Herbert over Tua are stemming primarily just from the injury concerns and not from actual tangible football stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, that would worry me.
Yeah, I mean, let's also not forget, BT, this is the height of misdirection in football right now. Reports get leaked or seeded out there for
purposes of manipulating someone's mindset. Well, oh my God, we got to go up. Somebody wants to go get Justin Herbert. We better figure out a way to move up and ensure that we want him because he's our prospect. And we thought we'd be able to land him at like 12 or something. Now we got to definitely move up. So that happens a lot. But just on its surface, I like Justin Herbert a lot. Physically, he's 6'5", 6'6". He's jacked. He's 230-something pounds. Like, he fits the part. He's got a really good arm. He's smart, as we all know. In fact, that's why he stayed at school for an extra year at Oregon, because he liked being a student. He also, I think, liked competing in college. It's just it's a different...
Well, he loved being a Duck.
That's right. That's right. So he just loved being at Oregon. And so... you know, I give him credit for that, but there were some inconsistencies in this game, you know, and so whether it was sub 60% a couple of years ago, to this year, he had an unbelievable season, but I don't want to say it's akin to Joe Burrow, but it's similar. But the thing that you've always found with Tua, and this is why I would prefer Tua, and I said this last week, even, you know, relative to Burrow, is Tua's always been consistent and good. And yes, he's had great weapons, but he's been a great leader for that team. And in difficult situations against one of the toughest schedules in college football, granted, I know they don't play on the road, but still, he was always successful. The injuries were the only thing that you worry about. And it's a big if. But if you're throwing that concern and making it be the deciding factor, I think you're doing yourself a disservice, because you're going to miss out on a great kid who we know is a great kid. There's no issues with him. He's all about football. He's all about doing things the right way. Mm-hmm. Who just had some bad luck with some ankles, and especially really bad luck with his hip.
Okay, Teek, so we have a poll question up there. I want you to jump on Teek and Tierney, give it a vote. NFL draft scout of Bleacher Report, says multiple teams favor Herbert over Tua. Now, knowing Tua's vast injury history, would you rather your team take him or Herbert in the top 10? Tua is the one option, upside too good. Another option, Herbert, Tua's always hurt. And the third one is neither worthy of the top 10. And it's funny, the way Mike framed that ties exactly into what I feel about this conversation. I don't hear, and this would worry me, if I'm a team that is about to have Justin Herbert delivered to my doorstep, whether it's 5, whether it's 3, whether it's 7, whether it's 9, it's going to be inside the top 10. It's going to be prominent. If he's my quarterback, I'm not saying he can't be really good. He might be. 6'6", 240, as you said, smart kid, intellectually superior to, I think, a lot of the quarterbacks coming out now. But what bothers me, and they're all actually pretty sharp, because Burrow's very sharp, and so is Tua. And I don't know about Love. I just don't know enough. I'm sure he's fine. But those are the three big ones. But the problem that I have, Teek, is that nobody's standing on top of the mountain saying, Justin Herbert is better than Tua because he's got superior arm talent.
That's right.
Or
that's right.
He sees the field better, or he's more competitive, or he played better in big games than Tua. No, they're saying Justin Herbert is better than Tua, or more desirable than Tua, because Tua's hurt a lot. That's not selling me.
No, that's right. It doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? Because Tua's not hurt right now. And, you know, maybe he gets hurt again, but maybe he doesn't. I mean, I generally have a philosophy on college athletes. If you're hurt in college, then there's a good chance you're going to be hurt on the next level, whether it's baseball, basketball, football. But the one position that I kind of caveat that with is quarterbacks in the National Football League, because they don't get hit, right? And so as long as you are structurally sound, which I think Tua is, and you're not a runner, which he's not. He's not Lamar Jackson. He is athletic and can move around the pocket a la Russell Wilson. But I wouldn't say Russell Wilson's a runner. I would say Russell Wilson runs when it's expedient for him. And so for me, the injury concern is something to note and to thoroughly check, which obviously teams can't do right now because of they're all homebound. But you check that out. If it's clear, you go with him, because he's a gamer and he's a winner. And at the end of the day, that's what you need. You need that kind of guy who you know you can count on in critical situations. And he had a lot of experience doing that, including coming into the national championship game and saving his team and getting a victory.
Let me ask you this then. Wouldn't this be the more prudent approach if you're not sold onto his health? And I get why most wouldn't be, or some, at least some, maybe most. if you're not sold on Herbert's ultimate upside, and I understand that for sure, as I've said many times on the show, why take one of them in one of those prominent spots in the top 10? Why not just roll the dice on Jordan Love at 13 or 15 or 17, whatever it might be?
Yeah, I mean, that's what a smart general manager would do. The challenge with doing that is that if you're wrong, meaning, yeah, we're not really sold, let's back up, and Tua becomes a Hall of Famer, then you never live it down. And, you know, kind of like Ryan Pace with the Chicago Bears going to get Mitch Trubisky and Pat Mahomes is going to be a Hall of Famer, you know? So yeah. you risk that. And especially if the guy you get, so Jordan Love, turns out to be average, okay, just never anything. Like, the Bears are never going to live that down. Right? There's no way to, like, reconcile that if you're a Bear and a Bear observer. The fact that they missed and it passed over Pat Mahomes, and he's literally the best quarterback in football right now, and you went and got Mitch Trubisky? Yeah. I mean, you don't live that kind of decision down.
All right. Go give it a vote on at Tiki and Tierney. You going Tua, you team Herbert, or you're not convinced either is worthy of a top 10 pick? Just go give it a vote at Tiki and Tierney. All right, Teague, someone's lying here. This could be a potentially filthy story. Coming up next, the NFL CBA. Well, it's ratified and it's signed, but was there a little bait and switch? Could there be a snag? What the hell's going on? We'll get to that coming up next. Teague and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Okay. Good song. Good song, D-Cell. Attaboy. This would be considered for the cross-country trip. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work. Get a quote, geico.com. I just saw this during the break here. Wow. This could change a lot of things here. The city of Toronto bans all public events until June 30th. So, at the earliest, July 1, and that's with no changes to their timeline, which just dropped about 30 minutes ago, Toronto banning all public events until June 30th. How are the Raptors going to play a home game in front of anybody? They're not. How are the Blue Jays going to play a home game? They're not. I mean, this is an under-the-radar big thing.
Yeah.
Big.
Huge thing, BT.
Wow.
I mean, not that affects all of the sports, but it does affect enough of them.
It affects them all. Toronto Maple Leafs, it affects everybody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they could move out of Toronto. Follow me? So the Maple Leafs or the Raptors could relocate to, who knows, somewhere in New York, whatever it may be.
Yeah. Buffalo is the nearest, American city.
It'd be grossly inconvenient. Wow. But if they're going to do that, then and the leagues come back, they don't have any other choice, right? That team can't just be excluded. So they're going to have to do something like that.
Wow, that's crazy.
That is nuts.
Just wanted to pass that along. All right, T, you've got to take the reins on this. Let me set this up, and you tell us what the hell is going on here. Eric Reed. Eric Reed wants the NFL's new collective bargaining agreement basically invalidated over language that he believes was added after the ratification of the pact earlier this month, calling for a full-fledged investigation and a revote. I mean, there's no chance that this actually happened, is there?
Well, we saw this a couple of, about a week and a half ago, BT, because there was Eric Reed talking about guys who are on permanent in total disability from the National Football League. And I remember I went and looked at this and I was like, how many guys are we talking about? And it's more than a few, because we assume that it's a physical permanent disability. You know, something like I messed up my knee so bad that I can't walk or I can't move or I have a hip replacement or something in that regard. But it's also mental and emotional. And so guys who are facing early onset dementia or things of that nature are also included in this total and permanent disability, permanent total, whichever way it's worded. And their monthly a number that they're getting from the NFL is going to be reduced by what they're getting from Social Security. And so apparently, and I looked at the language that Eric's lawyers put out, there was a change from what the NFLPA put out and then what the players voted on. Now, the question would become, would that have changed how some of these guys voted? And I don't know the answer, but I do know that the give and take of negotiating a CBA like the NFLPA and the NFL was doing, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of things that were given, a lot of things that were taken. The things that were given were that a significant number of retired players were given pension benefits that didn't previously had them. So it was helping more of the greater good, even though you're helping some of these really disabled and unable to work former NFL players a little bit less. That's essentially what it all comes down to.
Okay.
I don't know why this is a big soapbox issue for Eric Reed, but it's not the first time that we've heard this. I mean, he might just be unhappy with something else, and this is something that he can stand on and get people's attention regarding. But yeah, when I first read that 2 days ago, I was a little shocked that he was going back down that road.
Yeah. He put out a bunch of tweets yesterday, and as we know, he's been a vocal opponent of the agreement, and he provided a couple of screenshots of the CBA agreement that showed the language added after the players approved of the deal. I mean, it's riveting stuff. He tweets, "My lawyers," and then he mentions them, whatever, blah, blah, blah. "Sent a letter to the NFLPA and D. Smith, NFLPA, this morning," mm-hmm. who we had on the show 2 weeks ago. D. was with us, D. Smith.
Yep.
"This morning, demanding answers why language in the CBA was changed after the vote and demanding a new vote and investigation. Read the letter and compare the CBA that we voted on versus the CBA posted on the NFLPA website." Now, I mean, this is the height of unprofessionalism is not even close enough to chronicle or encapsulate what I'm trying to say. Like, there's certain things are unprofessional. I don't know. If you call out an employee in the workplace and there's a disruption and everybody here, like, that's unprofessional. This is reprehensible.
Well,
if this is true.
Yeah, I think you're right. And we saw some, I forget who filed the lawsuit. There was a player who was potentially running for a rep, and his name is slipping me right now, but he filed a lawsuit against to the National Labor Relations Board saying unfair practices because of things like this. Not exactly this, but things like this. Oh, Russell Okung was the one who did that. And mm-hmm. I don't know what was the result of that filing, but there was some distrust going around regarding, you know, the negotiation process. The issue that I've always had, BT, is that this negotiation has been going on for a long time, like a really long time, almost a year. And now guys decide to pay attention and they feel hoodwinked, but they should have been paying attention a long time ago. We've had this conversation both on and off air, BT. And so it frustrates me. But I get where Eric is coming from, because if this specific language that he's pointing to was going to change, I don't know, 100 guys' minds, this thing doesn't pass, right? Let's not forget.
That's
this
true.
Thing passed by 60 votes.
Yep, 60-something votes. Yep,
60-something
yep.
votes.
Great point.
So if it's that big of a deal, and maybe he'd have to do get a petition and get enough guys to say they would have changed their vote, that's how you get this thing really invalidated, meaning this new CBA invalidated.
Uh-huh.
But
I don't think he should even have to do that, though. If it's proven, like, why should the onus be on him to go and show that there's 100 votes that would potentially, or 63 votes that would potentially sway this?
Yeah.
I understand what you mean, but the fact that there was an apparent or an alleged bait and switch here mm-hmm. of the wording and the legality of the actual document should not, I mean, the onus should be now on the NFL to...
Well,
prove,
I don't think like, it has anything to do with the NFL.
I mean, not the NFL.
I think it's the NFLPA.
The NFLPA.
Yeah, it's all about the PA.
Why is the responsibility incumbent upon him now?
Yeah.
If somebody lied legally and changed this, Eric Reed should just point this out, sit back, and let other people take care of this.
BT, I don't want to be presumptuous.
Okay.
I don't know these guys now. I really don't. I've been out of the league for 13 seasons now. I honestly, if this would happen in my time, would have said, I bet 90% of the guys didn't even notice it. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it wasn't an issue that they were basing their decision on.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if it's brought to their attention and someone, you know, yells at them loud enough, this is your disability when you know, whatever, uh-huh. have repeated head trauma and so many concussions that at 40 something years old, you're not going to be able to remember how to get to the grocery store. This is taking money away from you. Maybe they would have listened then, mm-hmm. but I honestly believe that a lot of guys, it wouldn't have made that big of a difference.
Interesting. Wow. It just really sends out a signal of inconsistency, sure, but
yeah.
a real unethical approach and just no transparency. How do you trust anything now at this point?
Yeah, it's hard.
Wow.
Now, let's not forget, this is a significant document. We're talking about like literally two lines. In a significant document.
But there should be no lines.
It doesn't matter. I don't disagree, BT.
Okay.
But this, again, I'll go back to the subject that we're talking about. This is probably less than 1% of former players. So it's, I don't know if the current guys, that's what they're worried about.
Mm.
So I don't know if it would have changed people's votes. It might have.
Well, not only maybe changed their votes, but maybe just inspired the 25% of the players who didn't vote at all to actually maybe vote.
That's a good point. That's a great point. Don't tell me about your pain if you didn't participate in the process, man.
Yeah, I don't want to hear it. That is real. This is a story we will be following. Wow, crazy stuff. All right, Teague, coming up, we know about the restoration of the spring sports eligibility by the NCAA. But the winter sports denied the extra year of eligibility. We'll chat with Gary Parrish, who is terrific all things hoops, and we'll get Gary up on the show next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Vin Rewind continues all week on CBS Sports Network. Relive some of the best moments from March Madness on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. The buzzer beaters, the titans of the game, the upsets. Oh, man. We miss it, that is for sure. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. But as much as we miss it, good job by CBS piecing it together, giving us a little bit something for our basketball veins to fix our Jones here. We're all Jones and Fort, including this guy. Boy, he's got to be beyond Jones, and he's got to be salivating at this point. Gary Parrish, CBS Sports college basketball analyst. Great mind, really good perspective on the sport. Gary, welcome back, buddy. How you been, man? What's going on? You staying safe?
I am staying safe. I've gone from somebody who lives on the road in the month of March to a stay-at-home father for a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. So if I'm being honest, stay-at-home dad is a much more stressful job than talking about basketball and writing about basketball. But I am getting some good family time, and fingers crossed, staying safe. I hope you guys are doing the same.
We are. I was going to ask you real quick, do your kids like you still?
Well, my 17-year-old is real up in the air at this point, because he's obviously doing online high school right now, and that has been a weird adjustment for both he and his teachers. The little ones seem to still dig me, but man, trying to and listen, any father out there with young children, we have 3 children. We had one, my wife and I, when we were too young. He's now 17. Uh-huh. We had 2 when we were too old. They're now 63. So we didn't plan this very well. But any father of children right now who's staying at home with them will tell you, trying to work or maintain some level of normalcy while also, you know, juggling what you're juggling around the house, it's a task, man. I've always had an appreciation for stay-at-home parents, but it has grown remarkably over the past 3 weeks, because I am overwhelmed.
Yeah, no, it gets that way, especially when you have to school them as well. Those are for the younger ones, because that's how the boat that we and my wife are in. Thankfully, she's a good teacher, because I just take them out to play. She teaches, and so we're all good. We all don't cry too much here.
Yeah, my wife has got the little ones. She works on the reading and the writing, and I mostly am in charge of practicing Mario Kart with them.
That's the best thing to do. Mario Kart is the best way to go. Gary, you know, we saw this news come down from the NCAA regarding the spring sports getting an extra season of eligibility. They, you know, before we get to the merits of that, they declined to do it for the winter sports, which you kind of get. Most of the seasons were done anyways. But there's a couple that are just left in limbo, like men's and women's NCAA basketball tournaments. Ice hockey, I guess, falls in that as well. But, you know, it feels empty and it feels frustrating. Should they have extended it to the winter sports, at least the for-profit ones, because so much money was lost by the NCAA?
I guess I would say I would not have objected if they did, but I understand why they didn't, because I was somebody, you know, 3 weeks ago who was hoping that they would postpone the NCAA tournament as opposed to cancel the NCAA tournament. But, you know, given the benefit of the hindsight now, we understand why they canceled and didn't postpone. We're not going to be, you know, having basketball games in this country or football games or anything else. It doesn't appear anytime soon. I don't know if you guys saw, but Toronto just banned all public events till June 30th.
Yeah,
I
mean, we said that.
That's a long time from now. Mm-hmm. And so it is unfortunate and it is disappointing. But the truth is, the NCAA was put into an impossible situation. It seems clear at this point they did the right thing. And as it relates to whether or not seniors should have been allowed to come back, again, I wouldn't have objected to it, but I understand why they didn't do it. And the truth is, most of the Power Five coaches that I talked to, they didn't want that anyway. They thought the seniors that they would like to keep would probably be ready to go no matter what. And the seniors, and that would leave them stuck in theory with the ones they didn't want back anyway.
Yes.
So I think once the college coaches, basketball at the very least, made it pretty well known to their athletic directors and their conference commissioners, we don't want the seniors to come back. It's more trouble than it is good.
Yeah.
And it was never going to pass. I wasn't surprised yesterday when that one didn't pass.
No, neither was I. But so Gary, are you saying that the reason or the main reason that it wasn't passed is because of the not so much that they – well, let me frame it this way. Let's say that the basketball season only accumulated before the plug was pulled with the virus, say, you know, 9 or 10%, which is roughly the baseball and softball equivalent. Would we have the same same result, or was that – would the sentiments of the coach still have won out at that point?
Yeah, I think at that point we probably would have handled it the way we're handling spring sports. But given that some – players, some senior seasons were actually over, like completely in the books, it was always going to be a little difficult to figure out exactly where do you draw the line. Do you let all seniors come back if they want, even the ones whose seasons were over? Do you only let the ones whose seasons weren't over come back? And if so, are we really drawing the line because some conference tournaments are a week earlier than others? It was just a messy situation, and I think one with a lot of unintended consequences. For instance, imagine you're, and I just use this as one hypothetical, but it's a young man named A.J. Hoggard, who's a top 75 player in the class of 2020. He's a point guard, and he's going to Michigan State. And I wasn't involved in those recruiting meetings, but I'm confident part of it was Cassius Winston is our point guard now.
Yep.
He's a senior. He leaves. You come in. You're our starting point guard from day one. Well, then suddenly the NCAA says Cassius Winston can come back if he wants. Cassius Winston comes back. Now you've just taken an incoming freshman and put him on the bench when he thought he was going to be starting for one of the best programs in America. There was a whole lot of that kind of stuff involved.
Yeah.
Plus, it's an expensive proposition, and that's why they decided to – that and many other reasons is why they decided to just say, hey, this is unfortunate. We feel sick about it. But we're going to call that a completed season.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for everybody to move on.
So that's Gary Parrish, CBS Sports college basketball analyst. Gary with us here on Tiki and Tierney. The summer action is a big thing, is a big chance to shoot up. You just mentioned the player who's top 75 player for 2020. That's really when you elevate, not so much during the high school season, but a lot of these jumps, as you know, these monster jumps in the rankings, somebody surging into the top 100, somebody surging into the benchmark top 50, somebody goes from 4-star to 5-star. A lot of that happens during the summer, and who knows what kind of summer action we're getting. So the recruiting, laboratory has been equally compromised, or probably will be compromised, correct?
Well, it has definitely already been compromised because there are spring Nike and Adidas events that have already been suspended. You know, they'll try to play them at some point, but who knows if they're going to be able to do that. And again, if Toronto, a city of that size, has already decided we don't think it's going to be safe to gather to at least July 1st, then how are we going to have the normal July recruiting period here in the United States? I'm not ruling anything out. I'm not a scientist. But based on what the scientists are saying, yes, coaches are skeptical that they're going to have any sort of traditional recruiting time, evaluation time, and that's tough. I talked to a college basketball coach last night. He's got four scholarships right now to fill in the class of 2020. He doesn't know what to do with them because he can't go see players. He can't have players come see him. He said he had a mother of a prospect last week ask if they could just drive to campus, and he had to tell her, I'm not allowed to do that right now. And so what he told me, this college basketball coach, is he said, ultimately, I'm probably going to offer this kid a scholarship, but here's the truth. I've never seen him play in person. Wow. I've never met him in person. Mm. I've never met his parents in person. I'm strictly working off of film and conversations I've had with people who have seen him in person. And this coach, from that, assumed that he – and other coaches all over America are going to be making some mistakes because you just don't get the normal FaceTime and in-person time. You're not getting that right now. Nobody's getting that right now.
You know, Gary, does that stand to reason then that some of these, you know, bigger programs are going to benefit while the smaller ones could get crushed right now?
Oh, I would assume so because, you know, at a place like Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, North Carolina – there is, you know, everybody that you would even consider recruiting is somebody that you've seen a bunch or a lot of people have seen a bunch. It's the mid majors and the low majors that are trying to find, you know, under recruited guys, sort of off the radar guys. And how do you find off the radar prospects in March, April, May if you can't go out to events in March, April, May? And so I know the coaches are having a lot of conversations with recruiting analysts, with various AAU coaches. Hey, is there anybody available who you think might be able to help me? Because in the ways that they would normally go out and figure that out for themselves, they're just it's not a possible thing right now. They have no idea when they're going to be able to get back on a plane, get into a gym, and evaluate in person.
Who is the best team this year? I think Kansas is the easy answer and the common answer. Who do you think was going to win the championship?
I would have probably in my bracket picked Gonzaga to win the whole thing, but based on the way the season unfolded, whether you'd go by the eyeball test or the metrics or the accomplishments, Kansas was going to be the number one overall seed in the tournament, and Kansas was probably the best team in the country. They had an All-American level point guard in Devon Dodson, an All-American level center in Yudoka Azubuike. You know, they were top five in offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency, had more quadrant one wins than anybody else in the country, had four more wins inside the first two quadrants than anybody else in the country. And that, but like, they still would, like, if you gave me the field or Kansas, I would take the field. It's not like they were a sure thing. Almost nobody, probably nobody's ever a sure thing. And to me, that's the most disappointing about what happened. I understand why it had to happen, but, you know, like, Bill Self had an opportunity to join a very short list of people who have won multiple national championships. Now that's just a missed opportunity. But here's the thing. If you're Bill Self in Kansas, you can probably always reasonably assume you'll have another great team again sometime soon. The ones I get sick for is, like,
Dayton.
Yeah. Like, when is Dayton ever going to have the national player of the year, projected top five pick, and be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament? That's probably a once in a, you know, generation type thing, and they didn't get to see it play out. Those are the fans and the players I feel sick for, because it was really a unique situation they were in. Dayton, San Diego State, teams that usually can't reasonably think they could win a national title, had a real shot this year and then just never got to pursue it.
Even Seton Hall, even though they were at a better conference, but Seton Hall had a real renaissance year, and I feel you, very good points about the great stories that got squashed without coming to fruition. Gary, I want to throw this by you. And let's go to our friend Gary Parrish. Of course, he's got a show out in Memphis every day. I believe it starts in a couple of minutes, so we'll let you go after this. But we all saw the report a couple of days ago about the Grizzlies owner inquiring, kicking the tires about a possible move. I believe he did that last year, just trying to get some answers for the future of his franchise. What is the on the ground? What's the response there? And really, I always thought Memphis was a fairly viable NBA market. Is there a chance they leave? What's going to happen here?
Well, I would say that report came from a former beat writer at the Commercial Appeal, which is one of the daily newspapers here. Yep. And when I talked to people connected to the franchise, they shot that down really quickly. To put it in the plainest terms, they called the report, you know, quote, complete BS. And so it
But Gary, hold on. Don't they have to do that for their fans? How could they have to put that out there? Otherwise, why would people buy season tickets?
I'm sorry, guys. You broke up really badly on me.
I almost feel like they have to put that messaging out there, because if they don't, why would people buy season tickets for a team that might move?
There is a scenario where they could move someday, but right now, the way the contract with FedEx Forum is written, it makes it very, very difficult. I guess I'd bottom line it this way. I would never say that in 100 years the Grizzlies are going to be here. You just don't know. Yeah. But the perception from people around the franchise and inside, you know, that building is that there is no serious consideration to leaving any soon. And honestly, like, a big reason for that may end up being the selection and development of Ja Morant, because it appears now with that young core, the Grizzlies are going to be very good, or at least reasonably good, for a very long time. And that obviously helps in every way you could help make a franchise profitable and unwilling to want to even move.
Well, you would certainly know better than us. Great information, Gary. Good chat. Stay healthy. Enjoy being around the kids. The answer is a lot of scotch at night. And and hang in there, buddy. Thank you, Gary.
I appreciate you, Gary. Stay safe. I'll talk to you.
You got it, man. Right back to you. Our buddy Gary Parrish, CBS Sports College Hoops Analyst. He's got a radio show every day in the great city of Memphis, the great state of Tennessee. Coming up, let's get back to the decision that was just a couple hours ago, the NCAA granting the extra year of eligibility to the spring athletes, but not the winter ones. I know we just touched this with Gary, but Tiki and I could expand on that, which we will coming up on this third hour on this Tuesday. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.